First, apologies. I normally have a headset with a microphone, but I am traveling. I'm in the foothills of the Appalachians at the moment, visiting my grandkids. So you might hear background noise of birds and such as the sun is beginning to set. And I'm going to apologize early in case the 3-year-old comes running out here to find grandma. Hopefully, he's engaged with his other brothers. No promises. So,
Always bring a joyful mind.
there you go. There you go indeed. So tonight we're talking about mindfulness of the seven awakening factors, and we're specifically talking about joy and tranquility. And I want us to just look around and think about how we rush here, we rush there, or we mentally zone out. So let's stop right now. Stop rushing. Be present. Tonight, we're continuing the discussion of the seven awakening factors. And last week, Peter gave the opening talk to this topic. And I'm hopeful my beginning of this talk doesn't repeat too much of his content, but if it does, apologies in advance. Just to recap, the seven awakening factors start with mindfulness. Then we move to investigation, energy, rapture, which is also known as joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. In the fourth foundation of mindfulness described in the Satipatthana Sutta, the five hindrances are the obstructive qualities that we work to diminish in our practice, while the seven factors is the list of skillful qualities to develop. Hindrances we're trying to get rid of or diminish. Awakening factors we're trying to develop or improve our development of. The seven factors are divided into balancing, energizing, and calming factors. They are a practical support for working with fluctuating energies that our body, nervous system, and mind have. Think about that for a minute. Our body, our nervous system, and our mind have various energy levels at different times. And these factors help us work towards our goal. They help us balance. They help us energize when we have no energy. And they calm us when our energy needs to calm down. I find that fascinating, especially considering how long ago the Buddha talked about the seven awakening factors. We start with the factors, mindfulness is the balancing factor. So let's review that for a minute. Mindfulness is always skillful. Whatever experience, whatever energy, whatever emotional state that we find ourselves in, seeing clearly, understanding what's happening, and making wise choices based on that awareness is good practice. It's skillful. Doesn't matter the experience, the energy, or the emotional state. If we see it clearly, if we're making good choices on that clear view, if we're understanding what's happening, that awareness is good practice. So, mindfulness is thus a balancing factor in our life and is itself somewhat calming, but it supports both the energizing and the calming practices. So, meditation trains us to make mindful, loving awareness our default. That's our go-to. And then to bring that direct, undistracted awareness to everything we do. That's what we're practicing to increase our ability to be aware in the present moment all the time. Mindfulness is also a necessary support for the discernment needed in practice to know which other factors to lean into at any moment. In other words, we're being honest with ourselves. Where are we right now, and which factor do I need to call on so that I'm making wise choices? Without clearly understanding what's happening, we can't know what choices to make in the flow of our practice. Mindfulness sees our states as they unfold, recognizes them, remembers the instructions, and thus helps us to know whether we would be better served by energizing or calming qualities. That puts a lot on mindfulness, which is why mindfulness is the base. It's the balancing factor. It holds everything else up. The list of the seven factors, when taken sequentially, embodies the insight that most of us first need to arouse our energy for practice and develop nourishing and refreshing states of pleasure and joy before we can settle deeply into meditation. We start with the mindfulness we just talked about, and then we have three uplifting inner qualities that support engagement and passion for practice. That's investigation, energy, and rapture. And one of the energizing factors is rapture, which is also known as joy, which is one of our topics this evening. So, rapture or joy is a natural somatic and emotional state that spans a wide range of wholesome, pleasurable experiences. Please hear that. It's natural somatic and emotional state. It's not artificial, it's there. It can arise as a physical or energetic thrill that moves through the body, or a more emotional delight that uplifts and pervades the body and the heart. So it can be physical and emotional, or physical or emotional. So let's take a closer look at rapture, or what we're going to call tonight, joy. The word joy in English seems to imply a kind of abandon. I was overcome with joy. We think of joy as something that comes up suddenly, spontaneously, often for no reason. I experience joy when the 3-year-old sees bugs out here. It's fabulous to watch him discover something, and it just shows up. It's physical. You feel it in the body as an effortless lightness. It can be spiritual, as if we were uplifted by a divine force that somehow pervades our senses so that the whole world around us seems easeful. I can forget all the things going on in the world watching my youngest grandson discover critters out in the front yard of this cabin. And I'm smiling so much my face hurts because of the amount of joy I'm experiencing. It's a combination of the physical and the spiritual and the emotional. All of this is not far from the Buddhist word piti. And Peter, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. If not, please correct me. This
Pity.
is the enlightenment factor, often translated as joy or rapture. We feel this sensation, this joy sensation, arising in us when we meditate, when we begin to concentrate, but we go beyond the ordinary boredom of sitting still in meditation and trying not to think about our grocery lists. And we're struggling with that ragged mind that we can get. When we get that feeling of joy, it's fabulous. It takes effort, but the mind finally clicks in and can stay with that meditation object without much struggle, and joy arises. And we're happy. We feel at ease. In the path of purification, renowned 5th-century Buddhist philosopher Buddhaghosa delineates five different kinds of piti or joy. There's minor, momentary, showering, uplifting, and pervading. Now, I have to admit, I found his descriptions of them very entertaining. And I hadn't thought of them quite this way. But minor pity raises the hairs on the body. Have you ever felt that? Your hairs raise up? I feel that a lot when I hear incredibly beautiful music. I get goosebumps and my hairs stand up. It's sudden. That's minor joy. Momentary pity or momentary joy is like flashes of lightning that come and go brilliantly. Have you experienced that? Those flashes of lightning. It's brilliant. Unexpected. Showering pity or joy breaks over the body like waves. Just keeps coming. Because you don't get one wave. You get multiple waves when waves break. Buddhaghosa goes on to say that uplifting pity literally lifts the body so that it levitates or flies. I'll admit, I haven't felt this one. I haven't felt that I've levitated or flown yet. Looking forward to it. His fifth kind of joy, pervading joy, is the highest and most important sort. It completely suffuses the body, filling it like a rock cavern inundated by a great wave. And with this pervasive joy, the first stage of concentration, the first jhana, is achieved. The mind is so firm in its concentration that the five hindrances, desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, agitation and worry, and doubt, cannot possibly arise and are replaced by the five wholesome factors associated with concentration. These five factors are applied thought and discursive thought, which means the ability to easily take up and stay with the meditation object, which is usually the breath, plus joy, bliss, and unification of mind. Bliss is an intensification and completion of joy, or rapture, or pity. These definitions have made me rethink how I define words. I remember at times saying it was absolute bliss to eat a dessert. Now I have to find a different way to explain that, because that's not quite the completion of joy for me. And pervading joy. I'm going to have to remember bliss is pervading joy. So rapture or joy is a common side effect of concentration. And the context of meditation is considered wholesome and important to develop. So we want to develop rapture, or if you prefer the word joy, joy, in our meditation practice. In daily life, a rapture can be felt in moments when we are safe, we're engaged in a wonderful activity, like my comment earlier about my 3-year-old grandson finding bugs in the yard. And the mind relaxes enough to connect deeply with the joy and ease that are present. Thus, rapture and joy are healthy for us. Now think about what I just said. Rapture is felt in moments when we are safe, we're engaged in a wonderful activity, and the mind relaxed enough to connect deeply with the joy and ease that is present. Have you felt that? Can you remember times when you were feeling safe, engaged in something wonderful, and relaxed enough That you felt joy and you felt ease in your body, in your mind, in your whole being. That's a healthy feeling. One of the most important insights that Buddha had before his awakening was that rapture and pleasure of embodied meditation was not to be feared. This tells us we don't need to worry about becoming attached to joy or rapture, or think that it will lead us away from the path of clarity. Quite the opposite, rapture is an indispensable factor on the path to deep stillness, insight, and awakening. In other words, you have to have the joy to get to the deep stillness, insight, and awakening. Which tells me that cultivating it is one of our jobs as meditators. So, how do we do that? First, we have to remember that piti or joy is not as standard as happiness, but it's an active, energized interest in the present moment. Of the awakening factors, rapture, joy, piti is in the energizing section. It's supposed to make us feel energized. It's supposed to give us a lift. What can we do about that? Let's say meditation becomes a chore for you, or sometimes meditation is a chore for you. I know I have had those moments where I'm like, oh, I gotta sit now. It's time to sit. I need to stop what I'm doing and go sit. That didn't sound real energetic, did it? That didn't sound like I had positive feelings for getting to sit on my cushion. I need to shift my mental framing of that. In other words, I have to reframe my thoughts on that and go to, I get to rest my mind right now. But how do I increase the amount of joy or rapture in my life? I look for micro moments of comfort. That first sip of a warm cup of coffee, a soft breeze cooling off the afternoon, butterflies flying around the flowers in my garden at home. My dog, one of my dogs, doing something silly with one of the toys. My grandson playing with the bugs or the rocks or the leaves that are in the front yard here. Those little micro moments of comfort. Think about micro moments you may have. What micro moments do you have that you could focus on to increase or cultivate rapture and joy in your day? Think about that for about 30 seconds. See how many you come up with. I hope you came up with a couple. If you didn't, that's okay. Because there's a physical anchor you can use to help you work towards cultivating more rapture and joy in your life. And that is to focus heavily on the physical sensation of you smiling. I recommend doing this first in front of a mirror so you can see your smile and what your eyes look like. And your jaw and your cheekbones. Smile into the mirror and work on letting your eyes soften and your jaw soften into the smile so it doesn't feel so forced. First time you do this, you're going to feel weird. You're going to go, what am I doing? That girl's crazy having me stand in front of the mirror like this. And I get that. But sometimes we have to see ourselves practice something for us to see where we need to focus our attention. Maybe you're tense when you smile. Maybe you need to shrug your shoulders forward and backwards to relax them, to get the head to relax a little bit into your smile. But focus on smiling. And as your smoke is focusing on smiling, try to increase when you are doing that. Walking through the grocery store, focus on smiling and see how many people smile back at you. You're cultivating joy, your own joy, and potentially helping others cultivate theirs. So, ways to cultivate rapture or joy. First, remember it's active and it's an energized interest in the present moment. When you get out of your car after work, what do you see first? What can you pay attention to that makes you smile? Shift your mental framing from I have to I get to. I have to take the trash out. I get to recycle and put the recycling out, take care of the environment, take the trash out, and take the compost out to my garden so I'm regenerating the soil in my yard. I get to do that instead of have to. Look for those micro moments. You took 30 seconds to come up with a couple. Even if you only come up with one, that's one more than you had before. And if you didn't come up with any, you've got the physical option to focus on the physical sensations of a smile working to soften your eyes and your jaw. Rapture or joy is the last of the energizing factors. Then we are moving into the calming factor. And though we may feel like our anxious, exhausted minds need calm and concentration before they can do much else in practice, the seven factors suggest that the nourishment of engagement, effort, and joy is a stronger support for the depth. And initially, allows us to have more accessibility towards the calming factors. The placing of the calming factors after the energizing ones indicates, as most of various lists do when it comes to different readings on the seven factors of awakening, that deep calm and stillness need to be well supported by more active practices if they are to truly stabilize and take root. I'm going to say that again. The placing of the calming factors after the energizing factors indicates that deep calm and stillness need to be well supported by more active practices if they are to truly stabilize and take root in us. So think about that for a moment. We have to experience energetic factors before calming down. I'm going to use my 3-year-old grandson for an example again. Caden needs to expend energy before he can settle down to focus on calmer activities like coloring, reading, listening to somebody read to him, working on his letters, anything like that. The energy he has in his 3-year-old body has got to be worn down some. It's got to be expended. Goes out into the universe. And it's hard for me to think of the 3-year-old with the word tranquility, which is the first of the calming factors. Because Caden's usually only tranquil when he's sleeping, because he's 3. and he's all boy. But when he's expended some energy, he sleeps a beautiful sleep where he is calm. When he's expended just enough energy, he's tranquil and can be read to and enjoys it, and he's not fidgeting. Think about that in your own practice. If you have this joy just coming up in you, the rapture coming up in you of micro events and such, and you're expending that energy, how much easier is it for you to be tranquil, be calm, so that you can concentrate more? In Buddhist meditation, tranquility is described as a deeply relaxed, peaceful state of the body and mind that arises after joy, acting as a crucial bridge towards deep concentration and wisdom. Nourished by rapture and supported by wise effort and mindfulness, the body and mind can finally allow themselves to settle down into a comfortable stillness. So, tranquility is nourished by rapture and supported by wise effort and mindfulness. Remember, mindfulness is that base that all the other factors come out on, right? It's a good balance. So, why do we want stillness, a comfortable stillness? Because stillness allows us to focus more clearly. Calming the body and mind doesn't happen through force of will, but it must be invited through progressive relaxation and letting go. It's difficult to let go while the nervous system is still anxious and activated. And as we try to relax into stillness, we almost inevitably encounter the hindrances. Think about the following two questions for me. What techniques do you currently use to relax and let go? That's question one. What techniques do you use to relax and let go? Question two is, do they work for you? Take a few seconds here to think about those two questions. What are the techniques you use, and do they work? Have you noticed that before we can really settle into calm and concentration, those hindrances are popping up and we have to subdue them? And how do we do this? By bringing energizing factors to bear on them. And to remind you all, the energizing factors are investigation, energy itself, rapture, and joy. Mindfulness sees hindrances as they arise. Investigation understands them and where they come from. We bring energy to settling them, and the result is a deeper embodiment, pleasure, and joy. With this as a foundation, tranquility becomes possible, and from tranquility comes concentration. In practice, tranquility represents the point where physical and mental agitation melts away, leaving a sense of ease that makes it easier to observe reality clearly rather than reacting to it. I'm going to repeat that. Tranquility represents the point where physical and mental agitation melts away, leaving a sense of ease that makes it easier to observe reality clearly rather than reacting to it. We can use the list of the seven factors as a way to investigate which good qualities are strong in us and which need development. Often we'll find we have a tendency towards one or another factor, or a personality that prefers either the energizing or the calming factors. both energy and calm, or activation and deactivation, are necessary for the heart to grow strong and wise on the path. And if we have find that we have been focusing too much on the negative, always looking for and working with the hindrances, focusing on the factors of awakening can be a refreshing change. Because all of a sudden we're looking at positive things, right? We're not focused so much on the negative. Just changing our focus of where we're working on making ourselves more skillful can help us become more positive in our outlook. So how do we cultivate tranquility? It's not about checking out or zoning out. Okay, tranquility isn't just morphing into the couch cushion and becoming one with the couch. It is the active, gentle release of mental and physical bracing. Are you walking around tense all the time, waiting for the next thing to happen? Where do you carry your tension at? I carry mine in my shoulders, in my upper back. Where are you carrying all that? What's running through your head? What emotions are playing with you? We need to be able to release this gently, kindly, so that we can cultivate tranquility. How do you do this? There's specific meditative practices that will help you. I'm going to talk about three. The first is conscious downshifting. What do I mean by that? That's when you focus on slow exhalation led breathing to signal to your body that it's safe to relax. In other words, when you're focused on your breathing, say your inhale is a count of six. Work to make your exhale longer than that. Work towards your exhale being eight or nine or a count of 10. Doing that three times where you're doing deep breathing in and then out helps your body automatically relax. That was technique number one. Number two is softening the body. Intentionally scan for and soften the areas of your body that stay braced or clenched throughout the day. Set a timer on your phone. 5 minutes to the hour, a couple times a day. Take 5 minutes to do a quick body scan and see where you feel tense, where you feel clenched up. And work for softening that area. You may have to physically do something, like to remind myself I need to relax my shoulders. I physically roll mine really big, almost up to my ears, as far down as I can and around three times each direction. If it's my stomach, I do breathing exercises to try to get my stomach to relax. Feel where you're holding your tension, your stress, your bracing in your body, where it's clenched. Start with once a day. Try to work up to four times a day over the course of a month so that you're paying attention and body scanning. It just takes a few minutes. And working on relaxing your body, softening your body throughout the day. Option three is contentment. Cultivate a sense of satisfaction in the present moment, similar to the feeling of having successfully completed a task and allowing yourself to finally rest. At work, you finally got that report done. Take a breather, right? Contentment, right now, in the present moment. Be contented. Feel that moment where you can finally go, that's done. Okay, here we are. Some other tools for cultivating tranquility include things like 4-7-8 breathing. This ties into what I just talked about. You inhale for a count of four, you hold the breath for 7 seconds, or a count of seven, and you exhale very slowly for 8 seconds. Do that three times, 4-7-8. Dr. Andrew Weil talks about this a lot in his work. Another tool, box breathing. You inhale for four, hold for four, exhale for four, hold for four. Do this four times. This helps to create stable mental focus. Box breathing is used a lot with kids in schools who are dealing with trauma, dealing with anxiety. It works for adults too. The soothing exhale. I asked you a minute ago to work on lengthening your exhale. The soothing exhale wants you to lengthen it so that your exhale is double the length of your inhale. When you get to that point, it triggers an immediate relaxation response in your body. So if your inhale is six, your exhale is 12, your body's immediately going to start relaxing. And the fourth one I'm going to mention that I've already mentioned, but it's so important, I want to re-mention it, is the body scan. From head to toes or toes to head, whichever works better for you. Consciously release hidden tension in every major muscle. If you're not comfortable with body scans, a way to do this would be to start with your toes and scrunch them up and relax them. Then picture your foot and point it, then pull it towards you and flex it, then relax it. Then you move up to your calf, tighten your calf muscle, count to like three, relax it. And you move up every major muscle group in your body and tighten it, count of three, and then relax it. Move to the next one. So if body scans are not your forte, try it with the constriction of a muscle and the release just to get you started in this. In the description for this course, I talked about a two-question reset. And I'm going to give you two questions. The first one forces immediate, non-judgmental awareness of your current physical and mental state. And that question we ask ourselves is, what is present right now? So think about that. What is present right now? In your body, in your mind. That's question one. Question two stops the internal fight against reality, instantly reducing your mental stress. And that question is, can I let this be? Can I let this be? Let go of all the instructions I've given you. Let go of my voice. Just rest your mind in this quiet space for one full minute. Thank you. And as we come to the end of this talk, I have just a few thoughts for you. Memorizing the list of the seven factors and using it in meditation and daily life, you will start seeing these qualities everywhere. Developing the path in meditation, in our relationships, in our work in the world is synonymous with developing the factors. And as these positive qualities grow in us, the hindrances naturally lose their addictive power, and the practice truly starts to transform our lives. Don't leave your practice on the cushion. Carry this bright, balanced awareness directly into your next conversation, your relationship, your work. And on that, next week, Leslie will be talking about the final two factors. Thank you for listening tonight. And now we have time for questions, comments, thoughts, frustrations, whatever.
I really appreciate your presentation, Susan. One of the things I enjoy about Dharma talks, this is especially true on retreats, but it's true tonight too. I get to put into play what I'm hearing someone talk about. And what I was noticing while you were talking was I go to the gym and I do these leg presses. And the muscles are contracted, not because of tension, but because of exercise. So there's this strong, urgent energy that the mind certainly would like to categorize as painful and unpleasant. But somehow or other, because my practice is deep enough and joy is there, I can investigate or be with that sensation in such a way that it doesn't seem to be annoying or interfering. It's the point of awareness. It's the being at that moment and fully aware of it. And there's a joy in that. And there's a peacefulness in that. And it's about letting go into, as you were saying a few minutes ago, what is. You know, the rest of my body is open and peaceful. It's that energy that starts with my butt and goes down to my knees, the thigh muscles. It's very strong. But I'm not even interested in calling it pain. And that's part of joy for me is like, well, isn't that cool? Look what's happening, and I can be at peace with that. So I just wanted to thank you for your descriptions, and my grateful for my ability to kind of put it into play as you were talking.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Because not everything we feel is going to be stress and tension, as you pointed out. And if I were in your situation, I would feel joy over the pain in my legs because that meant I had a great workout. So
Right.
we
That's
all,
part of
you
it.
know, yeah, exactly.
I think Val had a comment.
I heard about how to relax the mind, long exhales. How about how to energize the mind? Sloth and torpor is very common to me. Energizing the mind is the joy part. That's those micro moments. Finding the micro moments in your day to bring joy up easier so that rapture is easier experienced will help bring the energy to the mind. Okay, so whether that's, you know, if what brings joy to you is walking in nature and noticing flowers or birds or whatever, or if joy to you is going into a museum, whatever sparks joy for you and makes you feel that sense of bubbling up, that will help energize your mind.
How about on the cushion? Is it as simple as the opposite of relaxing? Long inhales, short exhales?
It's not that simple on the cushion. On the cushion, to have that energy, you're going to want to focus on the fact that you're on the cushion and the energy it took to get you there, right? So that, because on the cushion, you've got a double-edged sword going, right? You want to be tranquil, calm, so that you can concentrate better. And you need it to be joyful and have rapture so that you had those energies getting you to the calmness. But if you're feeling sloth and torpor, you've got to deal with those hindrances first with the energizing ones, whether it's investigation, where is it coming from? Whether it's the energy that Peter talked about last week, those two plus joy or rapture, whichever word you prefer, are what help energize us. So, investigation, if you're sitting on the cushion and you're feeling the sloth and torpor come in, investigate it. That's adding energy. Does that make sense?
It does. Investigation does make sense.
Okay. Please, Leslie.
Linda had her has her hand raised.
Oh, okay. Oh, I
And
didn't see that. Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
yes.
Okay. What I have found is the joy that arises along with, I guess you would call it metta, kindness. When there is an insect in the house who should not be here and who needs to be outside, I have a little thingy I can, and I actually find myself talking to the insect as I'm doing it. So, okay, sweetie, we're going out now. Come on, and it's wriggling and it's so upset to be caught. But it's, then I bring it out and I release it, and I find that very joyful. For me. And I recognize, of course, I am being kind to this other living creature. And it's a combination of the two, I think. And it's those kinds of situations where I have felt the most joy. Even, I don't know, one time just looking out over people in the parking lot as we were waiting for a department store to open. And suddenly there was this sense of, I guess, just kindness and joy for everyone, even though I knew no one. But it was just flowing out for everybody. So it's that combination that I've noticed of kindness and joy. So I don't know if you have any comment about that.
No, a loving kindness practice helps bring joy. Right? Because the whole purpose of the loving kindness practice is to spread love outward and to appreciate the world and other beings around us. So that's another energetic way of getting to that joy, that rapture, to help us to then let us move into tranquility. And Leslie will talk about the other two factors to help us get to a point where concentration is deeper. Because the idea of all of this, we got mindfulness as that base. The idea of all of these factors is to get us into a deeper set, stage of concentration so that we're able to experience bliss while meditating. So I think a metta practice is fabulous. And what a great thing to add if somebody isn't doing that already. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Leslie?
Well, I just wanted to tag on to what you were saying before to the gentleman who was talking. I think you summed it up really well for me right at the end. By the way, beautiful talk. Thank you. So instructive. But I love the way you ended for us with these questions. What is present right now? Can I let this go? So it seems to me, especially when the hindrances arise, first of all, we know noting and naming. Let's recognize what's here. But that, I mean, that applies not just to the hindrances, but I think to the awakening factors too. Notice when joy is present, even, just in your normal everyday behaviors, as Linda was saying, in the parking lot, you notice that experience, name it, take a beat instead of rushing on into the store. Take a beat and say, what is here right now? I love that. I mean, I think these powerful questions are so helpful for me personally in my practice because they sort of act as a pry bar, that you're going to pry open a difficult, sticky, messy situation. And sometimes just asking the questions can do it. So it's very much related to what he was saying about investigation. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the comment. And it brought up for me when I worked in New York City, for those who haven't been to New York City, it is a lot of concrete. There are some designated green spaces. And there's a lot of people, especially pre-COVID. There's a lot of people in Manhattan. And trying to get by on the sidewalk takes a lot. And everybody's moving quickly because they've all got somewhere to be by a certain time. I had to start forcing myself to stop and look at the flowers that were in various pots along my path, to stop and look where trees were put in on the sidewalks, to find the designated green spaces, no matter how small they were, to sit in to get a feel of nature. Even if it was inside a building lobby where they had a water feature coming down the wall, to hear that sound, to bring joy up in the middle of this bustling 24-hour, 7-day-a-week city that never sleeps, and that is true. You could still find peace and quiet, which reminded me there was some place besides this concrete world. And those little things, when the flowers start blooming, when people in New York stop wearing all black, because black is a favorite color up there, and they start wearing colorful things because spring has arrived. Little notices like that just bring smiles to your face. And the joy that would rise up. Of little things to notice. So thank you for talking about the questions at the end, because I think noticing, naming what we're feeling, and being aware right in the moment is so key to deepening our practices. Peter.
I have.
Hold on one second. I'm not sure who's on the phone because I don't see a name, but Peter had his hand up. So hold on a second. Go ahead, Peter.
It's Sharon on the phone.
Oh, Sharon, give me a second.
I want
Okay, go
to
ahead.
respond to Val's question about dullness, sloth, and torpor. I think that what's worked for me, when one of the things that happens when I pay attention to the breath, the breath is going to become more subtle. And sloth and torpor, particularly when you're meditating, is the mind doesn't have enough interest in the breath to really take it further. So what I've done is shift my attention to sound, even if it's, a lawnmower or a clock ticking. Or the sound of my breath. Or I might focus in on some enduring physical sensation, like, for example, the ache in my legs. And just deciding to aim and sustain, to investigate that and how the mind is responding to that. And that enlivens my attention. More energy is available. Because it's the sensation of pain, for example, or sound is not as subtle as a long, quiet out-breath.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, let me just say, you go back to the breath with that renewed engaged interest and start investigating the breath again. You
Yeah,
know,
I got that. Yeah.
okay.
Sharon?
Yeah, Susan, thank you. I think that you did a your presentation was really engaging, I'm going to say, because as I was listening to you, I actually have some rollers of different sizes, and I was doing a lot of physical and other kinds of let's just say noticing how the roller under my lower back and what I could do in terms of the sensing the position of my legs or my shoulders or even having a different size roller on my shoulders below my head and all of the different things and sensations when I would turn my head to the left and slowly rotate my head to the right and all of that. You know, that to me was interesting, especially in along with some of the things you were saying about noticing the different sensations in the body. So thank you. And stretching is one of the things that is really a good go-to when I am being mindful of the body. The other thing that I wanted to, and I don't want to get too detailed on some of my awareness factors, but I've just sort of lost my train of thought. But I can go very quickly from a sense of calm and peacefulness and so forth to a frustration based on poor communication or somebody showing up without telling me that they're going to be doing something in my on my property because of something that had been done that needed to be corrected and all of the different things that can occur to undo a sense of peace and a sense of joy. So I have to bring myself down or bring my frustration down in terms of awareness that it is increasing. Or, you know, somebody's parking in a place where it is hard to get around and get out of my driveway. That's been going on with a lot of different kinds of things around me. But I was trying to go back to something that I was thinking when I first wanted to. I was listening to what Peter was saying, and I can't even remember what it was, except that a lot of the kinds of comments that I'm hearing and awareness of, like, just in the morning, with if I have the windows open, the sensation of a cool enough fresh air coming in. Just awakening to that is a pleasant sensation for me. And I don't know if I would call it joy, but it is pleasant and it is really something that I almost want to hold on to. And I try not to force the clinging to something pleasant. And that,
Does the breeze coming in make you smile?
it makes me feel, probably, I'm not aware that I'm smiling,
Okay.
but I'm feeling it.
Well, that's good.
And
I would challenge you though for some of the stuff you talked about, like the frustration level coming up and such. I would challenge you to reframe that.
reframe it.
Reframe it so that it's, I'm frustrated these people showed up, becomes, I'm happy they're here to finish the job.
Okay. And thank you for that, turning it around into something where it's not unpleasant.
It doesn't have to be. It's all about the frame we put it in, right? It's all about the lens we're looking at it in. And if the lens is negative, we're tamping down our ability to feel joy.
That's true. Thank you. And
Thank
you know, I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, it's I have to get off of the hook, as Peter might say, of something that is a negative feeling or a negative kind of sense of what's happening, and turn that into something that is neutral or even the way you suggested, positive, which I hadn't really thought about in that term.
Reframing is a beautiful gift.
That's
It is.
Sharon, that's part of always bring a joyful mind. We've been studying the Lojong, and that's one of the training points. So you
Always.
always bring a
What did you
joyful
say,
mind.
Peter?
What that means is that when something happens that's not right, the more we cultivate a calm, tranquil and peaceful mind, the easier it is to not be hooked.
Thank you. Yeah, that's true.
Thanks for your comments, Sharon. Appreciate it. April, did you have your hand up? Did I see that?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I thought it was when you said the thing about when you got to tranquility and you said we're not just merging with the couch, and and I loved that because then immediately I thought of being a tranquil potato. I'm like, don't be a tranquil potato. But I think it's important too because I do think a lot of people misunderstand meditation sometimes as being passive and checking out, and that actually with the seven factors of awakening and the tranquility, that it is an energized, it is an alert state, but moving into the calming factors. And it's probably also not helpful that the word tranquil in English sounds like tranquilizer, but anyway, I just thought that was, I liked that image. And so, yeah,
Thank
I
you.
think we all need
And
to go ahead.
no, go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I was done. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say that, it's all leading up to a deeper state of concentration,
Yeah.
which is in fact very energy driven, right? It's being able to concentrate that deeply takes a lot. And so to be able to move into a tranquil, not couch potato type of thing, we're not checking out, we're still here, it's still awareness. Being able to be calm about it and observant. So we're not reacting, we're seeing. We're clearly seeing. There's the clarity and such that we're observing right now.
That's the mindfulness and investigation.
It is the investigation that falls into tranquility. It's also the joy, because sometimes what we're going to see is going to be joyful. It's all of the stuff coming before that gets us to tranquil. Yes, April.
Well, and also that, yeah, I think another misconception people have that don't see how deep the path can go is again, so the checking out, but also the passivity and they don't realize that the wisdom factor, the discernment that is a part of this process. Yeah, so
Yeah, discernment's key.
I'm
Go
sorry.
ahead, Sharon.
I'm sorry. I just remembered what I had forgotten and that I wanted to say. And April, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm going to let you finish, and I'm going to try to remember what it was when you're finished with your thoughts.
No, I'm good. Thanks, Sharon, and thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
It has to do with my observation and getting joy from observing things kind of that had died and things that may be spoiled turning into something or becoming alive again. And it has to do with something that I mentioned to Peter about I bike around and I noticed that the tree, the beautiful mango tree in his yard last week, had pretty much, been attacked by the frost. And because I bike around my area here, I've been noticing mango trees, especially since I have one in my backyard that was just planted a month before in the ground. I mean, a month before we had that freeze around February, whatever month it was, where things were dying. Mm-hmm. And I've been noticing the leaves that are emerging
mm-hmm.
On these dead trees in different places below the top limbs and the outer limbs of mm-hmm. not just mangoes, but there's an avocado tree that my neighbor has in his backyard that pretty much died back, and other trees around the area that had are all, you know, have all the limbs that were frozen. Mm-hmm. And they are coming back with new growth, new leaves
mm-hmm.
at the different joints or the junctures of the limbs that are, to me, inspiring. And they give me joy because it's a renewal to me. I see it as a renewal of life in
yeah.
these trees.
Mm-hmm.
And even preparing a meal, I had a tomato that was, let's just say, was not doing real well. When I cut into it, I could see all of the seeds were dark. And I know that it was not something that was going to taste fresh. But what I noticed when I cut into it, that these tiny little seeds had tiny little sprout. They were sprouting. They were actually mm-hmm. developing into tiny little plants.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was I dumped them in a pot that had soil in it.
Mm-hmm.
Something had died in that pot, but the soil was still there. And now I have tiny little tomato plants that are growing, and I can see them growing.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the wonder of growth is what I'm talking about. And
yeah.
The
wonder of nature, the wonder of our growth, all of that. And I know Peter's about to say we're almost done with our time, but before he does that, I will tell you, we have a food forest at our house in Central Florida, and everything got hit. We thought we lost everything. My wife was very upset about that because that's her passion. That's her stress relief. She loves getting her hands dirty. And as leaves are coming up for the mango tree and the papaya tree, and they're coming up from the ground, and I'm telling her, I'm like, you got to come out and look at this. And she's like, I don't want to see the death anymore. I said, no, come look. And the joy
That's
and
right.
the radiance
That's
on
exactly
her face when she gets to see this stuff coming back reminds me how important growth is. And hopefully tonight's talk helped us all grow a little bit. And Peter, I will turn it over to you now because I'm looking at the clock as well. So thank you all. I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
A great symbol of rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
So next week, Leslie's going to talk to us about the factors of concentration and equanimity. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to that. And that will be the completion of the Seven Awakening Factors review. So as is our custom, let's sit together briefly. As we close the meeting, thank you for your practice. Wish you well, and I hope that we're reasonably safe and happy until the next time we have a chance to chat.